pharmacovigilance in 2015, poised for convergence of innovation. The 2010 European pharmacovigilance legislation has converted many of the concepts and approaches of pharmacovigilance into practical applications. Whilst refinement of this process continues, it already provides a system that promotes patient safety while remaining proportionate. This theme reviews the important learnings in pharmacovigilance to date and what role it plays in stimulating innovation. It examines which principles and technologies are driving change, how should these new insights and new approaches affect the way we consider risk-benefit, and should risk-benefit be applied in the same way for new and established treatments. With regard to PRAC, or the Pharmacovigilance Risk Assessment Committee, and its impact on approaches to safety, how is participation between bodies changing nationally and internationally, and how do we improve the process? On the role of patients of pharmacovigilance, how has their role changed, and are we giving them the right information to participate fully? Hello, I am Alberto Grignolo. I'm deputy editor for DIA Global Forum magazine. I'm here with Martin Lagendijk, pharmacovigilance coordinator for the Medicines Evaluation Board of the Netherlands, and Maria Grazia Zurlo, who serves as QPPV for Pfizer in Italy. Martin and Maria Grazia are co-leads for the DIA 2015 Euro Meetings theme on pharmacovigilance in 2015, poised for convergence and innovation. I'm excited to have this opportunity to discuss this important topic with them to share with our readership. Thank you for joining me today. Let me ask you the first question, if I may. What role does pharmacovigilance play in stimulating healthcare product innovation in Europe? Maria Grazia.
Well, from a theoretical standpoint, pharmacovigilance can play a major role as regards technological innovation, new methodologies, new ways to explore databases, social media, the wealth of data that is around the world on adverse events and safety information in general. The way we operate as industry in the pharmacovigilance environment at present is mostly within the boundaries of the regulatory requirements and the good pharmacovigilance practices that do not still consider those aspects as innovative pathways for pharmacovigilance to proceed, innovative ways for safety information to be collated and analyzed. All what pertains to innovation in the pharmacovigilance world at present is still secluded in the experimental research environment within consortia, within individual initiatives, at least in Europe, but has no, at present, no direct connection or correlation with the true day-to-day pharmacovigilance work, the one that is regulated. So we are still a bit behind in that sense, and as long as we don't reach a common, let's say, methodological approach to this new data, there will be a hiatus between true life and research, at least as I see it nowadays.
What needs to change, do you think, to get to the next level?
I think that what would be needed would be a concerted critical review of the current tools pharmacovigilance has on how the world has evolved in the past 30 years and critically review the current standard processes, standard regulations versus reality nowadays. So some tools that are perfect in certain settings are totally blunt in other settings, and you need to replace them with new things. Problem is, we are applying the same approach and the same paradigm to everything without taking into account the possibilities that the web, the internet era has opened.
Does the initiative need to come from industry alone, or from industry working with regulators, or from regulators alone?
It can only come from industry and regulators together, but the first step is on the regulatory side, because there is also on the regulatory side, there is the other limitation, that is, what are the legal requirements and the legislation does not take into consideration, does not factor in the evolution of technology worldwide.
What is the first step that you would like to see regulators take, Maria Grazia?
I think starting an open discussion, for example, as regards GVP, on how much this could be factored in, let's say, within the boundaries of what is acceptable, but taking into account that, in a way, the way we look at data nowadays may limit, in reality, our ability to do pharmacovigilance. So it's not useful either for industry or for the agencies, I think.
Thank you. Let me turn to Martin now for a moment for a different question. We are now 2 years since the inauguration of the PRAC, the Pharmacovigilance Risk Assessment Committee. Can you tell us what are some of the more painful or controversial lessons learned in these 2 years, and how has learning these lessons helped deliver innovative treatments to patients?
Yes, thank you. I think with the inauguration of the PRAC, there has been a huge increase of workload for the committee, which means that because of the current legislation, the role of the PRAC is very big. They have a lot of different aspects of pharmacovigilance they have to deal with, not only the periodic safety update reports or risk management plans, but also the post-authorization safety studies and the protocols thereof, signal management. And to top it all off, they also are heavily involved in the referral procedures. And we see that there have been a lot of referrals for well-established use products, which can lead to some complications for the implementation of the outcome of the referrals for the company. But for the PRAC, it means that they have a very big workload, which means that it has been a very big challenge to get all the items that they are responsible for done in their monthly meeting. So I think that was a big challenge for the PRAC, and it has been a steep learning curve for both the PRAC and the companies, I think.
Could I ask you if the workload was unexpected and or the resources were not allocated sufficiently?
I think in part it was unexpected that it would be this much, and especially also the number of referrals. I don't think beforehand we expected to see so many. I think another lesson that we learned is that at the marketing application of new products, that there was a little bit of tension between the already existing committee CHMP and the new committee PRAC, because the PRAC is looking at the risk management plan of these new products, while the CHMP is looking at all the other parts of the dossier for a new application, and that there was a little bit of a tension between the committees because they were separately looking at the same data. And I think now we have learned that we might change the role between the committees a little bit so that the PRAC will only come into action later on in the marketing application process. So there have been a lot of things that we've learned and have subsequently changed to enable to let both committees work in the best way that they can.
In retrospect, could the workload have been anticipated? Knowing what you know now, if you went back to day zero, do you think with the knowledge you have now, you could have anticipated this larger workload? Or was this would have been a complete surprise anyway?
I think it's difficult because not only was the PRAC introduced with the current pharmacovigilance legislation, but a lot of other aspects of pharmacovigilance were strengthened in that legislation. All those different aspects come together in the PRAC. So I think it would have been very difficult to really, really anticipate on what the workload would be for the committee.
Okay, no, thank you. Any other thoughts on this question?
I think that in a lot of ways, the new aspects of the pharmacovigilance legislation where the PRAC is involved in do really serve a purpose in the sense that we try to have patients to safe and effective use of the products, especially with, for instance, the signal detection, signal management. It's like a real step forward as it was before. And that way, the patient leaflets and everything and information for the patient is more up to date now than it was before.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much. Maria Grazia, let me turn back to you. I know you're really interested in social media. So in this space, how has the emergence of social media positively or negatively impacted the strategy and conduct of pharmacovigilance in Europe? What are your thoughts on this?
I think it's pretty much linked to the what we were discussing around innovation, in the sense that social media have exploded with millions of messages all over the world that may contain safety information. That safety information is not the original intent to report safety information that ICH envisaged when all this started. It's a different type of thing. It's a different type of information. And we have millions of those messages going around. And the way to look at that, in my mind, would require innovation, would require approaches like those that have been explored by several groups, for instance, on infectious diseases, on identifying the outburst of epidemics using social media, that is mapping, vectorial searches, all that stuff. And that, I think, could very positively impact if we learn how to use that information to give us hints, because it's not the real technical information that then you would require to understand whether or not there is an issue for a product. At present, however, the situation is that the only thing we can do, and we are required to do, is to make an ICSR, an ADR report, of any piece of safety information we encounter in the web, irrespective of its relevance, irrespective of whether anybody wanted to report actually an adverse reaction. And I think that this may even prevent signal detection, paradoxically, because we are increasing the background noise, we are increasing the haystack, and then you cannot find the needle. So I think that this is a negative impact in the sense not only of the amount of resources to do this, knowing that the added value may be nil or even detrimental, but the fact that we are still stuck with an approach for something else that is being transposed as such to a different type of data. And that is where I think is the negative impact. Is again linked with innovation in the sense that we should be able to look at it in different ways and innovate in pharmacovigilance moving forward, approaching things in a different manner. So to create three categories in a way. Now we have spontaneous reports, and then we have clinical studies. We need the in-between, the third category, that is the diffuse information.
Yesterday, keynote speaker Andrew Morris, Professor Morris of Scotland, made a big case, I think, for the use of big data to really understand the healthcare system and the impact and benefit on patients.
With a major difference. Okay. The big data he was referring to are actual medical information. This is diffuse noise that you have to read.
Big difference.
It's a big difference.
What can solve this signal-to-noise problem or noise-to-signal problem?
I think it can be solved even nowadays. I think that there are tools that have been developed, but still, as I was mentioning, in a sort of detached, secluded activities or initiatives. And we should start working at transposing that into practice and see how it works. Also because in the meanwhile, if you look at the regulations at present, we as an industry, we don't surf the web. And if we surf it and find something, then we have to report as an ICSR. So we don't surf it. But this is not good for pharmacovigilance. I mean, had we the right tool and not the potential nightmare of creating 3 million ADR reports without being able to read them, then the issue would be, let's find a tool and apply it and eventually exploit whatever is there that is worth exploiting.
Would you say that industry has the sort of responsibility or prerogative of taking the first step in that direction?
Well, this is a regulated environment. And there, and you know, industry can take certain steps, but there is always a resource constraint. So having a budget to do whatever is regulated is the norm. Having a budget for initiatives that are not required and may never fly, it's different.
Point taken. Thank you. Let me ask you both one final question. And fundamentally, how can these discussions in Europe be perhaps helpful to regulatory authorities who work in emerging economies in Africa, Latin America, or Asia? Martin?
I think that for me, like, if I can give a message to them, I think two things are very important. It's like collaboration, and then not only between industry and regulators, but also between companies. Especially like here in Europe, you have all discussion about the post-authorization safety studies that are imposed, and then multiple companies have to perform the study. I think that is also a good message to the outside world, like let's make it possible and easier for different parties to work together on a single problem or challenge. And the other thing that I think is very important is communication. So be very clear what you are doing and what you want, and then not only between regulators or between companies, but also to the patients and the general public, be transparent, so to speak. Okay. I think that's very important.
Okay, thank you. Finally, let me ask you both, out of the sessions in your theme at the Euro meeting, is there any message or signal that emerges that we haven't yet talked about? Anything you picked up in the sessions among the speakers that would be particularly interesting to our audience?
I think one of the things that is very interesting is a little bit of talk about how to do pharmacovigilance and risk management in relation to adaptive licensing, international collaboration between the FDA and Europe, because it can be very difficult to have separate legislation and separate rules while a lot of companies are working on a global scale. And I think also maybe the discussions about medication errors and how to deal with the medication errors is a very interesting aspect of our session. And then, of course, the session that I'm chairing about the risk management plan, I think it's very important that there is a discussion ongoing how to simplify the risk management plan for certain well-established products and generic products, because now there is like one template, but it doesn't fit all the products equally. So there's a discussion going on and initiatives from the industry side and also from the regulators to have this discussion how to improve the risk management plan so it can be the tool that it is intended to be.
What's the main problem with the risk management plan? Lack of a single template, as you mentioned, or some more fundamental problem?
No, I think an issue is the fact that that is one concept and it doesn't really fit for all types of medicinal products. So it works very well for new active substances, but then for products that have been on the market already for, I don't know, 20 years, 25 years, and they suddenly have to prepare a risk management plan, it does not work as well as it should be.
Thank you. Well, I want to thank you both.
Can
yes, Maria, grazie, of course.
Can I add one point?
Sure.
To the themes that I think are important, and it's very important that we improve the communication between regulators, including, I think, maybe finding ways to support the countries that are coming now into the picture, the countries on emerging economies, with general principles, but maybe sometimes not necessarily with the sophistication that is adopted, for example, in Europe, because they cannot manage it. But the essentials, we could give them some form of support to start in a manner that is also creates some level of consistency, because nowadays is really difficult with 80 different legislations and trying to accommodate everything. But the other important thing I think that is coming out again this year, was already last year, was a topic for discussion, is that there is another type of communication we have to work at, and that is a clear communication to the public and communication mm-hmm. to lay persons who don't understand our language but are taking the products and need to have the right information to be able to use the products in the right manner and make also a very educated decision at the individual level on whether they want to use it or not. And nowadays, I think we are still, we are not yet there in the sense that the way we communicate, the language we use, not necessarily reaches all the people who should be reached.
Thank you. Wonderful observation. And let me close now by thanking you both for taking the time for this important discussion. This concludes our podcast for today. To learn more about this topic or to read the current issue of DIA's Global Forum, please visit www.diaglobal.org. Thank you.